talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going to the front lines of history in the making. There was a lot of it made. I'm going to start with the biggest story of the day, which was the January 6th Commission, the third hearing. Third out of seven. There'll be four more. This one had some blockbuster revelations and some blockbuster video. And I'll tell you something that's very funny about it. It was really a tale of two hearings. The hearing went something like 2.5 hours. The first half of it was an absolute snooze. The first half of it, simply, you had to sit back and keep your eyes open with a toothpick. I mean, this guy, Judge Luttig, has been touted as the great conservative judge, should have been a justice, blah, blah, blah. And I got to tell you, the whole theme of the first half of it was basically, was it illegal and wrong for the vice president of the United States under the law to overrule the presidential election and put himself back in as vice president and Trump as president? Duh. I mean, you know, this is not Putin. This isn't Russia. Yeah, right. So, yeah, that's exactly right. That didn't need to take over an hour. I mean, it really didn't. And this guy, Luttig, I got to say it because I've been following these things with fascination. He sat there and they'd ask him a simple question like, what is your name? And he would sigh and he would push on his eyes and look down. For God's sake. And I'm being facetious about the what is your name. But I mean, it would be, you know, how would you care? And he'd think, he looked emotional. At first, I couldn't tell if he was tearing up and a little emotional or whether he frankly was a few bricks short of a load, okay, that the guy was getting on in years. That changed. But basically what was established in the first half was a snore. And it was basically, was it wrong? Would it have been wrong for Mike Pence if he had said, nah, I'm going to throw out the election and I'm going to reinstall myself, even though I lost as vice president for 4 years and Trump for 4 years. And so we had to get through all the weeds in the Constitution, all the weeds in the Electoral Count Act, all the weeds and everything. But basically the job got done and it was proven, and it didn't need to be proven all that much, that 2 and 2 in fact is 4, and he can't do that. But the second half of it was absolutely essential, and it was riveting, quite frankly. Some of this video we had seen before. Some of this video had been released by the January 6th Commission and others, and you've seen it before, but putting it all together, some of it you hadn't seen before, and putting it all together really was a chilling portrait of what happened on January 6th. Let me give you some of the high points, and by that I mean the important points that made it well worth watching this thing. And somebody had made, I think it was Ari Melber, the host from MSNBC, made the point that, you know, when you put together a 2.5 hour presentation, it takes a lot of judgment about what to put on video deposition and what to put on live. And I think they made a mistake putting Judge Luttig on live because he's not a TV presence. Would have been easier to simply put on his testimony in the deposition, and you could cut out the sign and the reflection of, you know, for a minute or two before he said something. But what he did say in the second one is very important, and here's some of the highlights. Judge Luttig said that the real danger here is not what happened on January 6th. The real danger is what will happen on another January 6th after the 2024 election. The judge said that Trump is a clear and present danger to this country and to our democracy, as are his allies and supporters. They have pledged in 2024 that they will do it again. They'll do whatever it takes, which included violence, if Trump or his anointed successor is not elected president. And Trump is saying it proudly and plainly, and they're just flat out coming out and saying it. One of the reasons, in my view, why the January 6th insurrection is not having a bigger effect in the polls. You know, right now, Trump and Biden are within the margin of error in a hypothetical matchup in 2024. That's very, very common. You have an incumbent president. Everybody pins everything that happens in foreign policy and domestic policy on. The other guy's out playing golf and just shooting his mouth off. So that's an easy one for him. And here, of course, Trump had been the president, and Trump has name recognition. I mean, the DeSantis's and the rest get swamped in these polls. But the fact of the matter is, the minute there's a race in 2024, that all falls away. And then they look at the guy on both sides. But, you know, one of the things about the January 6th insurrection is that it looked, five people died, police officers were beaten, eyes gouged out, fingers yanked off, one almost kicked to death, woman shot and killed, woman trampled to death, others committing suicide. But if you look at it visually, you have guys like the QAnon shaman. He has horns and fur and beating his chest like a gorilla, you know, facial paint and all that, war paint and all that. And some people, I think, are saying, oh, come on, yeah, these guys are bad. They should go to prison. And maybe the guys that set him up to it should go to prison. But it really didn't threaten our country because, you know, characters like the QAnon shaman couldn't take things over. Well, here's some other revelations that came out in the January 6th hearing yesterday. There's apparently a confidential source within the Proud Boys who's flipped and is ratting and singing like a canary, probably in exchange for no even prosecution, much less jail time. And they assigned a woman's name to her, which could be a beard. That could be simply a disguise because they want to identify who it is. Who knows who it is? But whoever this person was said that they were at Proud Boy meetings where they plotted to kill Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi. Now, you may say, okay, come on. Yeah, we know that. They said, hang Mike Pence and where Nancy, and they were going through. That was the majority of the rioters, the insurrectionists. But apparently there was a specific targeted plan to kill those two. One of the chilling things about this and about the hearing that came out, that at one point, Mike Pence and his family and just a handful of people guarding him came within 40 feet of the insurrectionists, 4-0. Now, the next time you go to a Green Bay Packer game, look at the field. 10 yards is 30 feet. Look at the goal line to the 10-yard line. Then add another 3 yards beyond that. 13 yards, 13 and a half yard, third yards. You know how close that is to a mob that intends to kill you? That's how close they came. Here are some of the other revelations. Pence's White House counsel, Jacobs, was very, very good. He was a conservative. He said flat out, I hope the Republicans win in 2024. But he gave clear, unadulterated testimony against this insurrection, against Trump, against everybody except his boss. A fellow named John Eastman, he was a lawyer for Trump. And he kept working on Pence, and Trump kept working on Pence. All you've got to do, Pence, here was the idea behind the Green Bay sweep. All you got to do is say, I, the vice president, under the Electoral Count Act, am concerned about these ballots, and I think they should be sent back to the states for review. So that's all we want you to do. And they go back to the states for review. The gerrymandered legislatures, Voss, for instance, in Wisconsin, will agree and they will give the electoral votes to Trump. That'll go through the court system. It'll take a year. And Trump will, and Pence will be in office the whole time. And then the courts may say, well, let him stay in the rest of it. That was the deal. The second deal that Pence didn't know was that Trump ginned up the insurrection so that he could declare martial law. He could say, oh, look, you know, people are fighting over the Electoral Count Act. We got to get to the bottom of this and declare martial law. And he almost did. He almost did until his Justice Department said that they would resign en masse, en masse. Other chilling things. The Secret Service said, Pence, get in the car. We're going to drive out of here. Pence wouldn't get in. His entire staff got in. Pence would not get in. And they said, what's the matter? Don't you trust us? And Pence said, chillingly, quote, I trust you, but I don't know who's driving the car. The people, some on that detail, were loyal to Trump. They would not have killed Pence, but they would have driven him off into Maryland somewhere. And then it would have looked like he abandoned the Capitol. There's a lot more on this. We're coming to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. I can't hear you, but I can hear the background a little bit.
Almost heaven.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines West are open, 844-967-2789. When I get back to the January 6th commission hearing yesterday, other important information that came out. This John Eastman, he had been a U.S. Supreme Court law clerk. He's a law professor. He took the fifth 100 times at his deposition, 100 times. I've taken a lot of depositions in my life. I really have. I think maybe once I've seen somebody take the fifth, taking it 100 times. This guy is guilty of sin, guilty of sin. And then afterwards, and he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, afterwards, he sends an email to Rudy Giuliani and he goes, I need a pardon. Tell Trump I need a pardon. you put something like that in writing. First of all, if you're not guilty, you don't need a pardon. Obviously, he's guilty. But secondly, you put that, I mean, you pick up the phone. Or in fact, you have your lawyer pick up the phone and call Giuliani's lawyer and say, I need a pardon. And he did not get a pardon. And amazingly, Giuliani didn't get a pardon. This guy Eastman is the one who was the brains behind setting a lot of this stuff up about Trump telling Pence to just look down at the electoral count certifications and say, I'm a little concerned about these. I'm sending them back to the states. That's all they wanted. And then we would have had, in the words of Mike Luttig, the judge, he said, if Pence had thrown out those votes, we would have had a revolution in this country. We would have had a revolution in this country. And the U.S. Supreme Court should follow the election returns. They should realize that they can only get away with so much. If you take away the right to a presidential election, let's put it this way. There was no presidential election in 1776. That's why George Washington and Madison and Jefferson and Franklin and the great patriots, Hamilton, rose up. So that there would be presidential elections. The another lawyer testified. This was Jacobs, Pence's lawyer. Eastman was the architect, the quarterback of the Green Bay sweep of corruptly overturning the election. Eastman, when he said a lot of this stuff, they asked Jacobs, Pence's lawyer, what did Pence say to you? Jacob said, Pence said, this is rubber room stuff. In other words, in an insane asylum. It's crazy. It's certifiable. And then when it was pointed out to Eastman that these people, that Trump had attacked Pence, Trump had pressured Pence, and that what he wanted was wrong and criminal, Eastman was in for a penny, in for a dollar. What he said is, okay, yeah, well, that was all crooked, but how about just one more little crooked thing? This is a law professor, for Pete's sake. It's a lawyer. One more crooked little thing. With all this other crooked stuff, at least let's put the cherry on the sundae and just send the electoral vote count back to the states. This, if you watch this, or even you watched anything about it, the final thing was, the testimony was, Trump did not care if there was violence, if it achieved his goals to stay in power. He didn't care if there was violence. He was watching TV in the White House after he told them that he was going to go with them to the Capitol. He was sitting there chuckling and chortling. Donald Trump's junior's girlfriend was dancing. They were exulting because these folks were with Trump, were zealous for Trump, and they'd been lied to and lathered up and told that there was a fraud in the election and that the voting machines had been rigged. That was false. Everybody who said that is being sued for over $1 billion by Dominion and others. Fox News is being sued. Individual Sean Hannity is being sued. Trump is being sued. Giuliani is being sued for over $1 billion. That's what resulted from this. But when they heard hang Mike Pence, Trump said, according to the testimony, said, well, maybe he deserves it. His own vice president, for Pete's sake. Trump, in a phone call, called Pence a wimp and the P word, as in Access Hollywood, when he says, not knowing he's on tape, with women, you can grab them in the P and they can't do anything about it. This is a crude guy. But not only is a crude guy, who says that to his vice president? You know, if Trump had surgery and was under anesthesia, which happens, that kind of thing, the vice president is temporarily the president of the United States and the commander in chief and has to respond. And you're calling him a wimp in the P word, you crude guy. And then in addition to that, he's sitting there chuckling, going, well, maybe Pence deserves it. And he told Pence, I made a big mistake picking you 4 years ago. This is a sick, sick individual. I strongly encourage everybody to watch the next one. It's coming up. And I also strongly encourage them, when you have an egghead like Luttig, who has some little good cherry-picked things to say, but is going to sit there sighing and contemplating his navel, you don't put him on live so he can exult in his geekiness. Put on what he has to say. Put on what he has to say. One little great tidbit. This is unbelievable. The governor of Montana is missing. What? You say he's missing? Yeah, I'm telling you, he's missing. Not that I care. Not that anybody cares, because he's a right-wing nut who beat up a reporter when he was running. He's a big guy. Some reporter was there and asked him a question he didn't like, and he tackles him. And, you know, this is a skinny little guy. I mean, who does that? Who does that? He's a punk. He's a thug. Greg Gianforte, the governor, is missing. And that's not a novel. That's not my next novel. I'm working on my next novel. This is a different novel. Nobody cares, but the governor of Montana is missing. They won't say where he is. They won't say where he is. They don't deny he's missing. They don't even say they know where he is. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of South Carolina. Remember that guy, Sanford? He said he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. Remember that guy? And he had a mistress in Argentina. And you say, come on, Matt, you're making that up. I'm really not making that up. He'd met somebody, started an affair with her. She's from Argentina. The guy puts on a disguise, drives to the airport himself, and tells his staff that he's going to contemplate things and hike the Appalachian Trail. Goes to the airport and gets on a plane to Argentina. I mean, I can imagine the guy sitting there. Guy looks over at him and say, hey, you look like Sanford, the governor of South Carolina. What is your name? John Smith. You know, he has a fake beard or whatever. He goes to Buenos Aires and comes back. You can't do that if you're governor. Now, you definitely can't do it if you're the governor of California and New York, and even Wisconsin. If Tony Evers, suddenly nobody could find him, you know, people would say, come on, Tony, where are you? That's unlikely, very, very unlikely. But this absolute clown and moron, he disappeared in the middle of the worst historic flooding in Montana. Have you been reading about it? In the national parks, Montana, California, everywhere out west. And they had to close them down even during tourist season. And the governor goes, time to get out of town. It sounds like Cruz down in Texas. A little cold around here. Time to go to Mexico, Cancun. Lie on the beach with a daiquiri with an umbrella in it and laugh. Folks back home, they're cold. I'm not cold. This guy goes, God, I don't know what to do. Can't stop the floods. I stood up against anything having to do with helping this through climate change relief and all that. He skips out. The governor of Montana is missing. No one cares. Many hope he doesn't come back. I mean, we're not saying that we hope something happens to him, but maybe he thinks New York City is a better place to be. Who knows? The bad man, Governor Montana, is missing. Going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, a breaking story in the Republican governor primary. You may have read about it yesterday. Maybe you didn't. Turns out that Rebecca Clayfish, the Duchess of Foxconn, who is running for the Republican nomination, is now in a essential tie with Tim Michaels. Back in 1995, was arrested. What were the circumstances? She was a student at Miami of Ohio. This is in Oxford, Ohio. This is when she was single. Her name was Rebecca Reed. She was arrested after stumbling intoxicated at 1:15 in the morning down a street. She was a sophomore at the Miami of Ohio. When the police came up to her, she gave them a false name, false age, and false social security number, which is obstruction. That's a separate crime, wasn't charged in this case. They put her in a squad car, took her down to the station, probably for her own safety. A young woman at 1:15 in the morning stumbling drunk along a street somewhere in a dark street is a very bad idea. When they got to the police station, she jumped out, bolted, and tried to get away. Now, that's crazy. A young woman like that intoxicated is not getting away from police officers, so they grabbed her and put her in handcuffs. She was cited for underage drinking, public intoxication, and resisting arrest. Now, this was in 95. As a result, she ended up leaving the university down there, came back to Wisconsin. I think her parents were finished up college. Now, I'm not being judgmental. I mean, if I had a nickel for everything everybody when they were 20 years old did, you know, I'd be a wealthy man. I mean, the point is, you have no judgment, but you have some rudimentary judgment. You know, do you jump out of a squad car and try to run away? Do you give them a fake name and age and social security number? So what's going on here? There was a guy, I think it was McCashin, one of them, who had entered the race, and Clayfish's people did opposition research on him and leaked to the papers that one time up in Minnesota, he'd been in a bar with some people, had to relieve himself. There was a line at the airport, at the restroom, and he went out on the sidewalk and relieved himself. Okay, now that ain't great. Is that a little different from this? Maybe, but she's the one who leaked it. and it drove him out of the race. Now, this one, she's already filed, and she's up until now, until Michaels got in, everybody figured, well, she's the best of a bad lot. I mean, the Duchess should not be the governor. The Duchess was the cheerleader for Foxconn. You start giving out $4 billion to a Chinese company that scams you. You don't want that as governor. But in any event, against Rampton and Nicholson, you say, well, now she's the best of a bad lot. She's the best of a bad lot. But this time, it's a little more competitive. Her explanation for this seems to me the best thing would have been, yeah, I made a terrible mistake when I was 20 years old. And anybody who hasn't, let me know, but I'm not going to be getting many phone calls. A lot of people when they're 20 years old do crazy things. Although 20 is a little different from 16, I must say. I mean, 20 is getting, you know, what, you're 30 years old? You go, yeah, I made a youthful mistake. I made a youthful mistake. No, come on. Come on. In any event, it's the sanctimonious nature of this. You know, a response was to attack the people that leaked it. You know, it's a shame that my opponents sneakily leaked this stuff without addressing the issues. Well, yeah, but you sneakily leaked stuff on McCashin without addressing the issues and, you know, whatever. So it remains to be seen what happens. I mean, it contributes to an impression of somebody who's not, frankly, ready to be governor. Governors are very, very tight. You know, we have a biannual budget that before you know it's going to be $100 billion. Not today or tomorrow, but it's very, very substantial. $80 billion, $75, $90 billion. It's very substantial. And when you have somebody who's the cheerleader for Scott Walker, who jumped up and down, give Foxconn billions of dollars, turn back $1 billion in Medicaid money and $1 billion in train money, in federal money that was ours, because we never get any of it back, saying we're conservatives, and then they just turned around and gave it to Minnesota and California, extra. And then Walker and Clayfish nevertheless assessed you and me another billion, almost $1 billion, for the Medicaid stuff that would have been handled federally. This is the gang that can't shoot straight. You got to have somebody who understands money. You have to have somebody who doesn't just run on bumper sticker slogans and fritter away, in this case, billions of dollars. So what's going to happen? I don't know. I will say, and a lot of people have said, well, if this is obstruction, that's a felony, why isn't it charged? And here's a very sad thing. There is a parallel justice system for what I would call minor nonviolent things. This is nonviolent, where the police have the discretion and the district attorney has the discretion to either cite somebody municipally or charge them criminally. And for instance, disorderly conduct. If it's a couple of college kids fighting in a bar, they're liable to say, throw them in the drunk tank to dry out and say, don't do it again, and cite them. It's a pink slip. It's sort of like speeding. So, and then you can just say, I was a municipal ordinance violation. I paid a fine. It doesn't appear on my criminal record. But if they want to, they can charge you with a misdemeanor in that case. In this case, with a felony. My advice to you is never give a fake name to the police. Never give a fake age. Never give a fake social security number. Never give a fake anything. You either cooperate, or if you are in real serious trouble, you can say, I want to talk to my lawyer first. But you do not lie to them. And that includes the FBI and others. So in this case, did the police act inappropriately? I don't think so. If there were a drunk UWM Marquette student coming down the street, the police would, for their own protection, young woman, 1:15 in the morning, staggering and stumbling down a dark street, very dangerous to her. For her own protection, they took her into custody to find out, you know, who her relatives or roommates were to come get her. She runs away from the squad car. That's, you know, that is a very bad misjudgment. They get her, catch her. So she gets cited for resisting arrest as well. It would be very common to cite somebody, not just cite them, but criminally charge them for resisting arrest and obstruction. They didn't do it here, and I don't think they made the wrong decision. I think, you know, you have somebody younger who has no record, made a mistake. You know, we're not being sanctimonious either. However, when you get into a race for governor, it does matter if you're sanctimonious against other people, like McCashin, who had to go to the bathroom and was drunk and did it in public on the street. Knocked him out of the race. Not saying he would have been any good either, quite frankly. The thing that this points up to, if there's a net gain out of this, and he would be very wise not to say anything about it, is Michaels. Although he better start looking at the litany of his own indiscretions. I don't know that he has any, but, you know, everybody, there's nobody that would want kind of an MRI given to his entire private life, his entire time. So probably his people advising him, just shut up. And he will. But what happens if he's the nominee and what happens if she's the nominee? I don't think Ramphin ends up being the nominee. Ramphin is sort of, you know, you kind of step back in horror as he steps out of the shadows, sort of a Quasimodo. Oh, my God, you're Quasimodo? You're running for governor? hey, listen, no way, Jose. Then you got Nicholson. Nicholson was a Democrat. He was the head of the Young Democrats nationally, or college Democrats. He gave a speech at the Democratic Convention, National Nominating Convention, blasting Republicans in the same language where he's now blasting Democrats. And this guy just said, well, I want to be in the Senate or governor, be an important guy. And in Wisconsin, you can't get a Democratic nomination without appeasing the woke mob, the identity politics mob. So I'm going to try to do it in the Republican Party and appease the MAGA mob. That's really what it comes down to. It's really what it comes down to. He's not going anywhere. The Duchess of Foxconn looked like the default candidate. The Duchess is heavily scripted. She was Walker's lieutenant governor. She ran in a multi-candidate primary. There are many of them. Walker didn't want her. Nobody wanted him. Not wanted her. But she sneaked in by a couple of percentage points. Now she's sort of Walker light. I mean, if you didn't like Walker, you're really not going to like Rebecca Clayfish. Let's get on with something new. I mean, even the Republican Party, let's have some new ideas for a change. Let's have some new ideas for a change. And so I think it's possible that Michaels gets the nomination. But if he does, Tony Evers has operated as a goalie to veto things that need to be vetoed. A lot of people initially thought that Michaels was sort of a Tommy Thompson type. In other words, he would shine everybody on the right with a lot of talk, but then deep down inside, he wouldn't betray our democracy or go MAGA nuts. Unfortunately, his ads are sort of MAGA nuts. So the problem is, if you think that somehow he is just woofing and that he'll turn around and be a Tommy Thompson, I'm beginning less and less to believe that, okay? Less and less to believe that. But it may end up being an Evers-Michaels ticket. And Evers is the goalie, a lonely goalie who's skating back and forth in front of the goal, vetoing, and that's the state of affairs in Wisconsin. Going to break, the lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, assault weapons, assault rifles. The Republican Party knew that it had a big problem after Uvalde and after Buffalo. They were intransigent on doing anything, but they had to give the appearance of doing something until the heat dialed down. So 10 of them got together. Moscow Mitch said he was on board to defeat the filibuster. And they said, we are going to have gun reform. We're going to have gun reform. Check the box. So everybody checks the box. They say, okay, the Republicans are on board. Something's going to get done. And then they go on to something else. They go on to the NBA finals. They go on to the Brewers. They go on to something else. In the meantime, those sneaky Republicans don't intend to do anything, and that was a sham. I said on our show the other day that, first of all, this is a watered-down bill. It doesn't really accomplish anything. It puts a little money for mental illness, whereas they had filibustered any money for addressing mental illness before. Puts a little money for school safety, locks on doors. Okay, well, a lot of doors have locks. A lot of school boards have the money to put locks on their doors. But it had one other thing. If you do a background check on a juvenile, you can now get access to his juvenile records, which are usually secret. But you don't have to do a background check in most cases, gun shows, private sales over the internet. And many of these people, when they're 18, who buy an AR-15, they're depressed, or they have 18-year-old hormones, or they're narcissistic, and they don't have a juvenile record. The two other things they did that they were loudly trumpeting were getting rid of the boyfriend loophole. If there's a spousal abuse case and it's the husband or a live-in significant other, you can take away his gun so he doesn't kill the woman. But if the boyfriend isn't living in the house, you can't take away the gun. And half of the women who get killed are killed by boyfriends who don't live in the house. So they said, oh, that's a big deal. The other one was red flag laws. They wouldn't do those. Red flag laws simply say that if you have a mentally ill relative, you can go to the judge, say, judge, this one's flat out nuts. He says he's going to kill people. And then you take his gun away until he is adjudicated mentally ill or not mentally ill. They wouldn't even do that. All they'd say, we'll give a little money to the states to encourage them to do that. And some states would do it and some wouldn't. Some already have red flag laws. Well, it turns out that was a scam. They did that. The polling shows that people are still concerned about Uvalde, but the Republicans checked a box. They're doing something about it, and the average person has the attention span of a gnat. The average person just wants a box checked, goes on to other things. I told you the other day that Cornyn, the guy from Texas, started to say, well, there's a couple of things here we're running into problems with. Now, why is that? 10 people, Republicans, said they would go against the filibuster. Why is there a bump in the road? Because they knew they were in there. Well, some of them are having second thoughts. So we want to take out the boyfriend loophole and the red flag thing. We don't want to give anybody any money to pass red flag laws. We don't think mentally ill people should have their constitutional rights infringed and have guns taken away. Mentally ill people. And secondly, if a boyfriend threatens somebody and doesn't actually live in the house, we don't want to take away his gun. But Cornyn, half of the women murdered are murdered by boyfriends who don't live in the house. Well, we got to think about that. Well, now they went one step further yesterday. There was a meeting to try to resolve this, and Cornyn got up and walked out, signaling to his base what he had said all along when he winked at them. So we got to at least talk about something after Uvalde and Buffalo, or we'll lose a few points in the congressional elections in November, and people are incredibly obtuse, and all we got to do is check the box that we talked about them and blame it on the Democrats. And now they're going around saying, we had a deal and the Democrats torpedoed it. Well, let me tell you something. One day we'll have statesmen in Congress again. And AR-15s and assault rifles will be designated military weapons. It's not a difficult concept. Let me tell you what other things are designated as military weapons that civilians can't have. Atomic bombs, biological weapons, chemical weapons, machine guns, stingers, javelins, bazookas, shoulder-held missile launchers. We don't want people shooting down commercial aircraft. An assault rifle is like a machine gun. High capacity. You can have a couple of high capacity magazines. The Islamic terrorist down in Florida who killed people in that LGBT nightclub, I think he killed something like 40 or 50 people, just sprayed the crowd. Guy in a movie theater out west did the same thing. That's a machine gun. I don't care what you call it. If it looks like a duck and talks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it is a duck. If it looks like a machine gun, talks like a machine gun, shoots like a machine gun, it is a machine gun. If that makes you feel any better. I'll tell you, the Republicans, even in this fake meeting on gun safety, wouldn't even discuss lowering the age for an AR-15 to 18. I know a lot of 18-year-old guys who are very responsible. I really do. So I'm in the Navy. No, Sam's shaking her head. She has never met one. Actually, I haven't met many of them. I probably met two or three of them, and they were in the Navy. But I'll tell you what. 18-year-old guys have no judgment, by and large. They're very emotional, and if they get angry or they think they got cheated or they think that life is not going well, when they're 18, they can go in and get an AR-15, go out to the range, and they can just spray the target, and it feels real good, real good. It's sort of a phallic symbol is what it really is. And so then they buy a couple of high-capacity magazines, and not many of them, but Sandy Hook, Uvalde, Buffalo. They figure, well, you know, life, is it worth living? I mean, you know, I'm immortal. I'm going to go in, and they always pick soft targets, first grade, fourth grade. They don't go in to an NRA meeting. You know, they don't go in to a meeting of people who could hurt them. We're not going to put up with it. They always go into a grade school or a high school in Parkland. An 18-year-old does not have the judgment to own an AR-15 and to buy one on his 18th birthday. He also doesn't have the judgment to drink, because in a lot of places they don't let him drink till they're 21. He didn't have the judgment to vote until 1972 when they passed a constitutional amendment. Even then, most of them don't vote anyway. An 18-year-old boy does not have the maturity to own an AR-15. And when you say they have constitutional rights, so do the 17-year-olds. And 12-year-olds, and we don't let them have an AR-15. It's a line-drawing issue. The Republican Party has just scammed you. They're taking out the boyfriend loophole and the red flag, and there's nothing left. You got scammed. We're going to a break. The lines are open. Do not hang up. I see you on the line. I will get back to you right after the break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.